Did you know that there are researchers studying the best ways to enhance your experience of leisure activities? We thought our current deep freeze would be a good time to check out this fascinating area of research. Here to tell us more is Dr. Celine Malkoch, Associate Professor of Marketing at the Business School at Ohio State University. Welcome, Dr. Malkoch.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about you. I'm fascinated looking at your CV to just see all that you have been doing now for a number of years to study time and our relationship to time. Can you tell us a bit about that and about you?
Well, I think me and my research is interrelated. I am originally from Turkey, and I lived about the first 20 years of my life there. And then I moved to the U.S. and, gotten used to the life here, traveling back and forth regularly, having Turkish au pairs living with me, I think gave me a vantage point to be able to compare and see cultural differences, especially cultural differences as to how we treat our time. And that inspired a lot of research questions, trying to solve puzzles of, why there are differences in the way we treat our time and trying to figure out what is the optimal way to actually, get the most of our time, not necessarily have the most number of activities, but have the most amount of enjoyment or most amount of productivity of our time.
And how does one even measure such things?
Yeah, it is not easy. We have to put people into situations and then ask self-reported enjoyment. We have done in a number of studies. And then in terms of the productivity, we actually measure what type of activities people engage in or what type of tasks they choose to do in a given period of time.
It's very fascinating to me. I would expect, I think many of us would expect that somebody coming from a business school perspective would be perhaps obsessed with how to make employees more productive, but you seem to have a special interest in how to make your life more enjoyable. What caught your interest in developing methodologies to look at that?
Well, I'm a consumer psychologist and a behavioral scientist, really. And I study consumption. And, we always think about consumption in terms of purchase behavior, but we are also consuming our time on a regular basis. How we choose to use our time is the ultimate consumption decision, in my opinion. So I've been coming at it from the perspective of how does a person choose what activities is going to consume their time, and why do we make those decisions, and whether they're actually achieving their goals of, happiness in life, which is, I think, what we are all seeking at the end of the day.
Let's hope so. The alternative is not terribly attractive to me, but that's my values. So,
No, it isn't.
although as I understand it from your research, you've identified that there are a lot of people who just look at leisure time almost as being wasted time versus leisure time as being maybe valuable time in life.
Yeah, I mean, we have a variety of research projects on it, but in one of the research projects, we are really looking at whether at least some group of people really think that leisure is wasteful. But we know that working is productive, but that doesn't necessarily mean that not working, meaning leisure, is actually a wasteful activity. There's a huge line of work that shows that leisure is actually necessary for even productivity so that we can relax and, have a reset. Now, we've figured that there is some people that actually might think so. And our studies shows that there is that group of people. We find them in India, we find them in France, we find them in the US, although to varying degrees. And then we wonder, if they exist, if these people actually think that leisure is wasteful, what other different things might they be doing or happening to them? We have found that people who endorse this belief tend to not choose leisure activities when given the option, even when productivity is not a goal. If you put them into an environment in which they will be experiencing leisure, they tend not to enjoy it very much. And if we measure life outcomes, this is correlational, of course, not necessarily causal, but if you look at the people who endorse this belief, you find that they're more likely to be stressed, clinically anxious, and clinically depressed. So it doesn't happen to be seem to be a very good idea to do it. But nonetheless, there are ways in which to overcome it. And when we remind people how important leisure is in life and can get people to see that perspective, we seem to turn the effect off in the sense that we can make even people with disbelief actually lean towards choosing leisure and then ultimately enjoying it too.
And I understand you have some like research-based recommendations for how to go about that.
Yeah, in another project, we really wanted to understand whether scheduling leisure was a good idea. This really came from observations cross-culturally, because in Turkey, people just don't schedule anything really, let alone leisure. And in the U.S., you know, my four-year-old play dates, we schedule 2 weeks in advance. In most people, seven-year-olds, eight-year-olds, they have got their own schedule going on. And I realized that this is creating a tendency for us to use adjectives or qualifiers like have to and must to activities where we actually want to do. Like instead of saying, I want to go see my friend, we find ourselves saying, oh, now I have to see my friend. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't bode well. It just doesn't make any sense that we do it. But, you know, every one of us find ourselves in that situation if we have lucky scheduled activities. So we wondered if this actually influenced the enjoyment at the end of the day. And we run, you know, a series of, I think, 25 studies at the end of the project and found a very strong support for it that if leisure activities are scheduled, people tend to dread them more. They have less anticipation. They want to cancel these activities if they are given the chance. And if they are indeed in the option of using those funds for leisure, they tend to enjoy it significantly less as well.
Oh, sad. Very sad.
I know. That is sad. And we compare that to clearly unplanned behavior, like, you know, impromptu running into a situation and enjoying yourself. Now, that's not feasible, clearly, because, you know, if you go through life hoping that opportunities will pop in our way, that doesn't necessarily work out that way. So we wanted to find a solution to this, and our solution was what we call the rough planning. What we find is that if you make plans to meet someone at 6 p.m. on a Thursday, that might not be a good idea, because this very strict beginning time imposes qualities of work to this leisure activity. We schedule dentist appointments at 6. We schedule meetings at 6. But we don't actually think about leisure in a strict beginning and end time. We want that to be free-flowing. So if you remove that strictness and say, you know, I'm going to have drinks with my friend after dinner, all of a sudden that strictness goes away and the enjoyment comes back. The same thing with anticipation of enjoyment, but as well as the actual enjoyment of the activity.
Fascinating. Fascinating. So schedule very kind of roughly or vaguely. Boy, that goes against some of the grain of some of our overly scheduled people, but I like the concept.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of time management gurus, and I'm not necessarily as like a time management person as much as being a consumer psychologist, but I think there needs to be a distinction to be made about what we are maximizing when we are looking at our time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people confuse whether we are maximizing number of activities they engage in or whether we are maximizing the outcomes we're seeking, let that be leisure or productivity.
Right. So like time with your friend on Friday evening as opposed to having a 6 o'clock appointment with your friend.
Exactly. And a lot of people, I feel like in our culture today, is more focused on the number of things that they want to get done. And they are not thinking as much about how much they will feel or what they will feel or how productive they will be in each of those activities when they go about doing them. And we are just trying to switch the focus to the outcome from just the mere and sheer number of activities.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And with a science-based way of doing this, too. Other things that you've observed?
We have several studies going about in the same domain. We also find that if you have back-to-back activities, let's say you're going to go lunch with your friends and then you're going to meet up for your friend for a coffee, let's say two separate activities. If these are back-to-back, one is at noon and the other one is at 2:30, it seems like people enjoy the first one less compared to if the first activity was at noon but the other one was, say, at 4. And we find that this is because when we have something directly following the initial activity, we start to live the second one in our mind. We keep on thinking about the next thing that's coming up. And the more we think about the next thing that's coming up, we actually lose our focus on the current activity. And we can all attest to that. You know, you're going to go to a movie after your dinner, and we start thinking about being at the movie, going there on time, what the movie is going to be. And before you know it, you're thinking less about the dinner and enjoying that and more focused on the future activity. And as an outcome, the first one is unfortunately a little bit ruined.
Sure, sure. Amazing. Amazing. So what do you suggest people do?
What I try to do is not to put things back to back. Just, I think it also goes well with the rough scheduling idea. You know, when I go out with my husband now, we say, you know what, let's go for dinner. And then the movie, we'll figure it out. Maybe it's not going to be the perfect movie that we want to see, but when we finish dinner, we'll just waltz into the movie theater and we'll see what's on. And if there's something good, we'll watch it. Uh-huh. And if not, maybe we'll do something else. Maybe we'll just go grab a drink instead.
Huh. But you'll spend time with each other.
But we'll spend time with each other and actually be present in the time that we spend each other.
Right. So really, really be in the now with the people that you're with.
Of course, easier said than done.
Much more easily said than done, of course. But being intentional about it makes sense, and you've got the science to back it up.
Yep, as much as I can, we're trying it. As you alluded, it's not the easiest thing to actually study, but we have been coming up with creative ways to do so, and so far, so good.
Wow. So if I were to summarize what I've been hearing from you, it's okay to schedule things, but schedule it more roughly or flexibly, you know, without a precise time necessarily. Avoid back-to-back scheduling so that you've got flexibility with the time that you're spending with people, and be very much in the now with people when you're with them.
It sounds like common sense, but it's, you know, we don't think about these things unless somebody goes and studies it like we do.
Yeah. And now the work that you've been doing has really been focusing, it sounds like, on mostly U.S. consumers. But I'm wondering, you know, what are your thoughts about extrapolating some of these things to other cultures? Or have you done any kind of cross-cultural studies on similar things?
The cross-cultural one we have some cross-cultural data is the one about the people who endorse the belief that leisure is wasteful. And we have done those studies in U.S. as well as India and France. And we chose those cultures on purpose because, you know, France is higher on leisure and lower on the industrious aspect of things. And India, although being an Eastern culture, is actually pretty industrious in its culture. And what we find is that the relationships hold. So if you identify individuals who believe leisure is wasteful, they too tend to choose leisure activities to a lesser extent, and they too tend to show more depression and more anxiety and more stress. However, the quantity of those individuals differ by culture. So you observe much more of them in U.S. and India compared to France, for instance. But if you can find individuals, their behaviors mimic each other.
Very, very fascinating. Very fascinating. We've been talking with Dr. Celine Malkoch, who is Associate Professor of Marketing at the Fisher College of Business at The Ohio State University in Columbus. She has an extensive publishing history in academic business, but also has some very consumer accessible things on both TED Talks as well as Quartz. So encourage our listeners to consider looking up those if you want to learn more. Dr. Malkoch, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This has really been a fascinating eye-opener into your work and into human beings.
Well, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, good. Well, enjoy the rest of your evening now.
Thank you.